And now, more tips with your host, Rebecca, on lifestyle improvement.
And remember that in our program, we present our opinion and the opinion of our guest, and it's not to be interpreted as medical advice.
Thank you so much for joining us today here on Lifestyle Improvement for part two of our interview with Virginia Morris. Ms. Morris is an award-winning journalist and the author of the book Talking About Death, which came out in 2004, and the 1996 best-selling book on the subject of how to care for aging parents, which also won the Books for a Better Life Award, was declared by the Wall Street Journal as the best guide on the subject, and was called the Caregiver's Bible by the ABC World News.
You talked a little bit about the healthy mindset, and then you were just now touching upon the issue of the difficulty of the job. And however, you also give advice about how to take care of your body to keep a healthy body, specifically because this is a stressful job that has a lot of chronic stress connected to it. So like you mentioned, it's not just a one day. It's this continuum thing that you have to deal with on a daily basis. Talk to us about that a little bit more and how to deal with being able to keep more of a healthy body and keeping the stress in context.
Well, I think most people know what they should be doing. So I feel a little like a broken record if I say, look at your diet. You need to eat well. Do not start your morning with a donut or no donut and just coffee. Or, you know, we all know that we should be eating well, and we all know that it affects our daily energy and how we sort of take in the world. But caring for a parent, it's easy to fall into a lot of bad habits, to start drinking more, to start filling those holes with sugar. And we all do it. But I think that if you can really stop and say, okay, today's a new day. I need to take care of myself and just do whatever small change you can do. It doesn't have to be everything at once. But you know, exercising more, eating better, getting out to a support group, seeing friends, being around people who really care about you, and not being around any toxic people. You know, those are kind of really basic, getting sleep, all of that. So the other things that I mentioned about just recognizing what this job is and how big it is, and it isn't something you're supposed to take on by yourself, and you're not supposed to be able to do all of it. So really think about your limits and write down, maybe on a piece of paper, here's what I can do. I'll drive her to her doctor's appointments and I'll help with her checkbook. Here's what I can't do. And then stop feeling bad that you're not doing the stuff that you can't do. And, you know, really use community services and help. And I think just give yourself a hug occasionally, because people really are working hard, and this is a hard job, and you don't need to be down on yourself.
Well, thank you so much. Those are great ideas about how to think about your health as well. Virginia, depression and isolation seem to be a very challenging aspect related to caregiving for elderly parents or elderly loved ones, or just loved ones in general that need your help. What advice do you share in your book about this subject?
If it's true depression, clinical depression, it needs to be treated and you need professional help. It's very easy to feel like, oh, well, he's 89 and his friends are all dead and he has nothing to do during the day, so he's depressed. That doesn't mean that it shouldn't be treated. Depression does cross what we consider sort of gloominess does cross a line into clinical depression, and that needs to be treated. But beyond that, I think it's always a challenge for caregivers to find stuff for their parents to do to sort of make their lives a happier place. And I will give you some thoughts, but I do it with some hesitation because I know that caregivers are trying to do so much that I don't like to say, oh, here's 10 other things you should be doing. But if that's a worry, I think technology has given us some wonderful options when you have a parent who's alone So just turning on Skype when you and your family are eating dinner and letting dad, if he's far away, at least kind of watch that interaction and be part of that. So without adding much to your day work, get your parent on Skype as often as possible. I think it really, that human connectedness, even through a screen, is better than none. Having the grandchildren just make cards occasionally, or videotaping your son's soccer game and sending it to dad, and seeing if you can get them on these devices. I realize that it's really hard to teach a 90-year-old person how to Skype, much less watch a video, but they do make, and I won't go into it all now, but they're making easier and easier platforms for all of this, just for the elderly, that, you know, maybe have five buttons like play, stop. So I think getting them as much into the family loop as possible is really important. Another thing that's really powerful is reminiscing. And it can be a nice thing to do even if you're cooking and just asking your parent about what was it like when he was in first grade, or what was it like in his hometown, or how did he meet his wife, or why did he pick that job? You know, even people who have early stages of Alzheimer's and other dementia can remember the past. And it's a very happy place to be. You're young, you're healthy, you have your whole life in front of you. So talking about the past, it's also very important for the elderly to feel like they've passed those stories on. So I think if you can really get your parent talking, tape record it. You don't want to lose those stories. I think sometimes just asking them to do something, even if you don't need it done, that's within their realm of, like, my mom was in a wheelchair and paralyzed on half her body. There wasn't a whole lot she could do, but there were things she could do. So, mom, could you look through these papers for me, or shell these peas for me, or put stamps on these envelopes for me? Anything that makes them feel useful and helpful is really important to feel like you have a value. I think people can live with all sorts of disabilities and ailments, but living without purpose is the most painful of all. So, you know, while you think that your parents' disease or dementia or, you know, injury is what's hard in their life, I would counter that it's probably a feeling of what's the point? Why am I here? So just giving them anything that's makes them feel useful or wanted at all is really beneficial. And it doesn't have to be something that takes up a huge amount of your time. And it's another way you can get extended family involved. Like, hey, could you just stop by and spend an hour with her? Could you write her a note? Or could you send her some photos from that party you were at? Can really make somebody feel like they're loved and included.
That's wonderful. So I hear you saying, as far as the person you're caring for, making sure that there's that purposefulness, making sure they still feel they have a purpose, and that there is a connection, that they're connected to their environment, that they're connected to the people that they love, that is still something that continues to be a dynamic process in their life.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And there's other, you know, look in your community. I know people shy away from things like adult day services, but in fact, a lot of them are really great programs. I know a lot of elderly people in various parts of the country who really look forward to going. There's usually a van that will take you. You're around other people doing whatever during the day, but you're around other people. You get out of the house. They're usually very inexpensive. So, you know, just find out what's out there and very slowly encourage your parent to, like, let's just go for an hour and check it out. You don't have to do it. And slowly kind of nudge them in that direction, because people need people.
So would you say that, as far as caregivers, would you say that also purposefulness and connection is essential for them too, or to deal with the issues of depression and isolation that caregivers have to deal with as well?
Well, yeah, and that's why I keep repeating the you need to get out. I think caregivers often shut down their social life, and it's very damaging. Get out. Talk about something else. Just get around other people. And if it's not going to a dinner party, just go down to the library or walk through town and have a cup of tea and, you know, start conversations. Go for a walk with a friend, which means two birds with one stone because you're getting exercise and you're seeing a friend. But it's very easy to, without even realizing you're doing it, kind of slowly shut people out of your life. And if that means including your parent in some way, if that's the only way you can do it, we'll figure something out. But make sure you see friends and other people, colleagues, get out. Oddly, you said purpose, which made me think, you know, oddly, I think what also weirdly happens to caregivers, caregiving, as much as you might complain about it, gives you a purpose. So you dig yourself further and further in because, oh, I have a purpose. And then when this person's gone and you lose that purpose, it's not just the grief of the person, your whole life is sort of unraveled.
This is your host, Rebecca, and now we will take a short break, and we will be right back with more ideas on lifestyle improvement.
A unique and specialized approach to spinal care is what you will find in the Advanced Spinal Care Clinic in Graham, Washington. Here's Dr. Craig Lipinski explaining why Nuka Care is unlike any other treatment.
Our goal is that we're making a specialized correction to the skull, the atlas, and the neck of each individual that is custom made or custom and specific created to get them healthy and then have them stay that way.
One of only 23 board certified Nuka practitioners in the world, Dr. Craig Lipinski offers you care that can significantly impact your health in positive ways.
This week we've seen somebody in here who's had a 50-point drop in blood pressure by having the skull, atlas, and neck corrected to a proper position.
To find out more about how Nuka Care can change your life, visit www.nuccawashington.com or call 253-445-8181.
And then when this person's gone and you lose that purpose, it's not just the grief of the person, your whole life is sort of unraveled. And if you haven't maintained some semblance of routine and friendships and other things that mattered in your life, when your parent is gone, there's this void that's hard to fill.
Yes, it is. It's a new adjustment. So talking about getting a little bit more into the nitty-gritty of some more difficult subjects, another very challenging aspect about caregiving that is sometimes very confusing and overwhelming for caregivers is the legal issues that you have to deal with in addition to having to deal with your own emotions and with having to stay healthy and ahead of things so that you can continue to be a functional caregiver. What is your advice?
Well, it shouldn't be that complicated. In fact, you want to make sure your parent has basically four documents. You want to make sure they have an up-to-date will. You want to make sure they have signed a durable power of attorney, which gives you or someone else the authority to make decisions about finances and housing, legal decisions. You want to have advance directives, and that includes two documents. One is a living will, which just outlines your general wishes concerning end-of-life care, and the other is a power of attorney for health care. So just like the durable power of attorney you signed for financial issues, you're now signing one for medical issues. The hardest part of all of that is picking the right person, because your favorite child or your spouse may not be the right person, may not be the person who can really make those hard medical decisions or ask hard medical questions. So it's really deciding who. I've seen families where they give all the kids the same powers, and that's not a great idea, because now you have three kids arguing over, you know, what are we going to do? But the legal part of it, while it sounds overwhelming, as long as you have those documents, you're in pretty good shape. The next steps get complicated in terms of finances, because if people start to do what's known as kind of Medicaid planning, that gets trickier and that gets complicated. Estate planning, the financial aspects of it get complicated. But I think legally, it's essential that all of us have those documents. you know, if you shouldn't wait to get old to have those documents. We should all have them. We should update them regularly.
Now, lastly, you have another book that also addresses the aspect of preparation as you help a loved one that is nearing the end. Tell us more about this difficult part.
Oh, well, I can go on forever about that one. I love this subject. Well, I had mentioned that you need to talk about end-of-life care. And people think, I know what my parent wants. I don't need to worry about that. She wants, she doesn't want it dragged out. She wouldn't want to be, just sitting on life support with no hope. But the problem is, relatively recently, that's all changed. And we are not looking at a completely futile situation. Should we unplug somebody? We are making decisions all along the path that are what I would say were more gray areas of, do you want dialysis? Do you want this next treatment? Do you want this surgery? Should we go ahead with this transfusion? And you keep saying yes to those things because it doesn't occur to you you should say anything else. Until, oh my God, we're right where she never wanted to be. How did we get here? So I try to get people to just talk about medical care without the end of life part in front of it, because I think what happens is you talk about end of life care and then you wait to be at the end of life. And by the time you're at the end of life, clearly, obviously, blatantly at the end of life, you've missed the boat. You've lost the opportunity to really kind of make this a kinder, gentler death. So I think it's important for people to really talk in very broad terms about what do you fear about being sick, about being an invalid, about death? What would be unacceptable for you? What do you find comforting when you are sick? When you had the flu last, what was comforting to you? What do we need to know about making decisions, not just end-of-life decisions, but all medical decisions, so that every time there's a decision to be made, you're thinking about what is the goal of this treatment? Why would we do it? What happens if we don't do it? How is this really going to help her? Is life after this treatment going to be a life that she really wants? And the medical system tends to just want to treat each ailment, and you suddenly are on this kind of tidal wave going in one direction straight for the ICU. And if you don't have a proxy, a healthcare proxy, or somebody in your family who knows that they need to go in there and say, why are we doing this? I'm not sure we want to be doing this. I want to know, can we do this on a trial basis? Could we do this in a lower dose? Is this really the best thing for her? To ask hard questions and be ready to make some hard decisions. And some of it is understanding that just because you don't accept an aggressive medical treatment, it does not mean that someone's going to die any sooner than they would have otherwise. You aren't killing somebody. We often feel we're killing somebody. There are actually a lot of studies that show that people who get connected to hospice live longer than people in the same situation who didn't get connected to hospice. Because in fact, once you're free of pain and fear and you're surrounded by people you love and you're kind of eating things you like and smelling things you like and in a place you like, people actually have much more will to live. And that's a very powerful thing. And they do very well. And people lying in ICUs with tubes and monitors and things beeping and people waking them up at 4 a.m. are afraid and terrified and getting treatments they often don't need. So it's just important to be very educated as you move, as your parent becomes more ill and things get more complicated, to really ask questions and not be afraid to say, I don't think we want to do that. It's important to not be afraid to call hospice. People don't actually die because they call hospice or because they talk about death. It's okay to call hospice long before you think you need it, just to learn, okay, well, here's where you are, here's who you are, here's who we are, to make some connection. Because then when you're facing a medical decision, you say, you know what, I'm going to call Karen at hospice and get some advice here because I'm not really sure what to do. You haven't signed on yet. You just have somebody who can help you through, I'm in the ER and I don't really, they're telling me this, I don't know what to do. So at least you have another opinion. But I think we have to kind of reclaim this part of life and own it a little bit, because most people die so horrifically. And I spent 4 years, you know, walking around ICUs and following around hospice workers and interviewing people who are dying and their families. And it's scary to talk about, but it really brings you a lot of peace of mind. People cry, people laugh, people feel more intimately involved with each other when they can really make decisions and own this part of life and make it not necessarily as long as possible, but as full as possible. So I would encourage people very early on to start those conversations. It's so much easier to start them when it's theoretical, when you're just saying, what if, you know, and, you know, we all should have those conversations. If you're 40 years old, you should be talking to somebody about your wishes, your fears, your concerns, your hopes, your goals. What's important to you? Mobility, living absolutely as long as possible in any situation at all, being free of pain, not being a burden. People have all different things that are important to them, and those will change with time. So have the conversations, keep having the conversations, don't be afraid of those conversations. And then when you get into situations where it's just one more treatment, one more process, you know, ask the questions. Because, you know, a good death sounds like kind of cliche, but in fact, death can be an incredibly intimate, oddly wonderful experience and a privilege to be part of. And the grief afterward is so much easier when the process was not horrific. I can tell you, I'll tell you a personal story. When my mom died, and I won't go into all the details. It was long and complicated. The doctors wanted to do things. Everything was going wrong. They wanted more treatments. And we finally said, enough, stop. And I said to her, how do you want this to play out? And she said, I want a day with my children. I want a few hours with her dear love of her life. And then I want to go to sleep. So we all sat around. We sang songs. We told stories. We discussed old times, five of her children and her. We had such a wonderful day. She had a few hours with her boyfriend. She fell asleep and eventually her heart stopped beating. And while we were there talking and telling stories and deep into the afternoon, one of my siblings said to her, Mom, what was the best time in your life? She sat there for a while thinking about that, and she looked around, she said, right now, today. And that was my mother hours before she died, you know, after years of sickness. So, you know, we don't have to be so afraid of this process. It can be way more gentle than it is.
Virginia, that is beautiful, incredibly valuable information. But more than anything, it's so important. And for you to present it so eloquently and so beautifully as, you know, a moment to really, in some ways, prepare with an embracing attitude is really inspirational.
I could talk a long time on that subject.
Thank you. Please come back and talk to us again about that. It's great to have somebody that has your wealth of knowledge in addition to experience as well. Thank you for sharing that. Now, Virginia, you also have a website where you give some ideas about resources and a list of, again, your survival tips are there. Would you like to share more about your website?
It's called careforaging.coms .com, and it's fairly simple at this point. I'm not the most internet savvy person yet. Everyone keeps telling me I'm supposed to write a blog and tweet and Instagram, and I don't even know what most of these things are. So, a bit of a dinosaur in that regard. I have to get with the times. But I do have a website, and people can contact me through it. not only for like speaking engagements and all that kind of stuff, but just questions, issues. I actually love talking to people about this subject. So if anybody has a question, they can find my contact information on the website.
Thank you again for your time, Virginia, and for all the great ideas that you have shared with us today. We want to remind our listeners that they can go to your website, which is www.careforagingparents.com, to buy your book, How to Care for Aging Parents, which was re-released in 2014. And they can also purchase this other book that you have as well, talking about death, which based on what you're sharing today, must be an incredible book as well. And you can purchase both of your books in Amazon.com. So thank you, Virginia. And please come back. We would love to have you back. Come to talk to us more about your experiences and your advice. The words that you had to share today, I am sure, will be treasured by many caregivers out there that are waiting to hear information that will help them have a better day, which is what we're hoping to do with this radio program. So thank you so much.
I would love to. Thanks so much.
And remember that in our program, we present our opinion and the opinion of our guest, and it's not to be interpreted as medical advice.
Thank you so much for joining us today here on Lifestyle Improvement for part two of our interview with Virginia Morris. Ms. Morris is an award-winning journalist and the author of the book Talking About Death, which came out in 2004, and the 1996 best-selling book on the subject of How to Care for Aging Parents, which also won the Books for a Better Life Award, was declared by the Wall Street Journal as the best guide on the subject, and was called the Caregiver's Bible by the ABC World News. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget to join us again next Sunday morning from 7:30 to 8 for more tips on lifestyle improvement.